While cotton's a wonderful fabric to wear for clothes, it's not so great when it comes to sleeping, specifically for your skin and your hair. If you've ever woken up with frizzy hair or a bunch of sheet marks on your face, that's because of cotton. Cotton actually absorbs moisture and your skincare and can dry out your skin and hair. You know when you finally do that thing you've been reading about and meaning to do forever, and then you're like, why did I wait so long to do this? That's how I feel about my 100% mulberry silk pillowcase from Blissy. Silk actually reduces frizz and tangles and prevents breakage because it keeps the moisture in your hair. And best of all, it's temperature regulating and always cool. My son actually hates it when he comes in and cuddles with me. He's like, your pillowcase is cold. I'm like, I know, I want it that way. Also, if you have to pull your hair back, like me, stop using elastic hair ties. This is true for you and your kids. Elastic can cause more breakage and creates these creases. Blissy actually makes amazing silk hair ties. It's what I use every night. Blissy's 100% mulberry silk pillowcases are naturally hypoallergenic, cooling, and unlike other silk pillowcases, Blissy's are machine washable. Everybody I know loves them. They have a ton of different prints and colors, and they make great gifts because there's an option for literally anyone. Men love them too. They have over 1 million raving fans, and you could be next. Try now risk-free for 60 nights at blissy.com/wellfed and get an additional 30% off. That's Blissy, blissy.com/wellfed. And use code WELLFED to get an additional 30% off. Your skin and hair will thank you. You are now listening to Well-Fed Women, the show that's been radically changing the way women perceive health, fitness, and their bodies since 2015. I'm your host, Noelle Tarr. Submit your questions to wellfedwomen@gmail.com. And you can keep up with the show on Instagram at wellfedwomen. Welcome, friends. This is the Well-Fed Women Podcast, episode number 742. Not there yet. 472. I'm here with my co-host, Stephanie Ruper. Today, we're going to be discussing a variety of topics, including unexpected weight gain, postpartum, what to do about that, autoimmune disease and protein requirements, and then a little bit about running. Are you screwing yourself in the long run by doing cardio? We're also going to be talking about blood sugar management and formulations. We're going to be doing another Instagram controversy topic. Some people were not happy about a new product that came out, I think about a week ago. So we're going to share our thoughts on it. So hi, Stephanie.
Hey.
Hey. So how's it going over there?
Great. You?
Fantastic. All right, my nose is clear. I'm breathing good. Sound is good. Let's go. So on the Insta last week, and I actually really hadn't thought, so blood sugar has never been a big topic that we have discussed much. It's something that I think when we first started talking about paleo, it was like, well, if you just don't eat the carbs, you're going to be fine, right? Because like paleo was like basically no carb. So it wasn't really a topic that we touched on until I think we sort of started growing up and realizing, oh gosh, blood sugar is much bigger than just carbohydrates. Like, you know, when you're stressed, your blood sugar can be all over the place and all that kind of stuff. So, and especially with intermittent fasting and all that, starting and people skipping breakfast, a lot of people have blood sugar issues. And I'm sure you and I have dealt with it and are kind of experimenting with it ourselves. One of the things that you started learning more about was blood sugar. I think about maybe the last 6 to 12 months, and you started sharing people with me who were big time blood sugar influencers, shall we say. One of them is, what's her handle? Glucose Goddess. Yes. So her name is Jessie. She's got millions of followers. She does these really, you know, she has this brilliant kind of these Instagram pictures in which it'll be a graph. Or like a two graphs, let's just say two separate graphs, one over the other. And it's like, here's what eating pasta does to your blood sugar. And so it'll show this and it'll show the spike, blah, blah, blah. This is what eating pasta with broccoli, if you eat broccoli right beforehand and then you eat pasta, here's how your blood sugar changes. So in other words, it's all about optimizing blood sugar, reducing blood sugar spikes. At the very early part of February, she launched her first product. So she came out with a book a while ago, but she came out officially with this first product. It's called Glucose Goddess Anti-Spike Formula. It says it works within minutes. makes the glucose spike of carbs and sugar up to 40% smaller. The next slide is one of those traditional graphs. The top of it says eating time, cake. You eat cake, you have this huge spike, slow return, and then a subsequent crash in blood sugar. 2+ hours after, your blood sugar is still elevated. It looks more like 2.5 to 3 hours. It's now below where your blood sugar started before you ate the cake. Then it says anti-spike, then cake. So you take her new anti-spike pills, it's just little capsules. You eat the cake. There's literally a very small elevation, not even 10, 15 points. And it's pretty stable. There's a little bit of a dip afterwards, but it kind of normalizes again. So she says, you take anti-spike before eating carbs or sugar and it reduces their glucose spike by up to 40%. Same cake, up to 40%, less spike. Same pasta, up to 40%, less spike. I'm not sure if you looked into the ingredients, but I do know that it had some cinnamon extract, some lemon extract, mulberry leaf extract. I believe it had some sort of, I thought I saw apple cider vinegar. So it's basically just a bunch of more natural stuff, a bunch of extracts that are known to help improve blood sugar. So I would love, of course, let's get to the controversy. People were not happy about this. Okay. So most
people aren't happy about anything ever.
True.
Ever do something, people are going to get mad. I would
like to remind everyone, there's no such thing as a magic pill. Where can we see the trials? Don't fall prey to these fear-mongering marketing tactics. There is literally no evidence that this pill does anything. This was a long, long comment. I'm not going to continue. Ignore the negative comments. Some are worried you might actually make money out of a great idea. Pure jealousy. Just keep the good work. You know, a lot of people were saying, I'm so disappointed. I'm very concerned. And we see the studies.
I just took off my jacket. Throwing it across.
Why is everybody being so negative? She saw a demand for something. She created it. I'm a fan of your work, but this pill, just no. A lot of thoughts.
Let me tell you what I think. Look, now here's the thing. Like I'm getting activated. Anytime that I get upset when I encounter an idea or a thing, the first thing I try to do is pause and think, why am I getting upset? Noelle said that Noelle mentioned this last week. You know, it's what people put out there. When you have a response, like that's in you. Somebody has created something and you have a feeling about it. And what does that say? What is that saying about you and what you care about? And then maybe like try to identify it. And then if you're like really passionate about this thing, go do something to address it in the world instead of comment here on this post. Or maybe it just illuminates to you like a vulnerability that you have. And that's something that you can then go like address, you know, everybody's so mad. The reality, I don't, why, right? So I don't watch a lot of TV, but I recently discovered that I had Hulu and I didn't know it. So I've been doing a little bit of TV watching, which is less addictive for me than reading books. I've been doing it, and I keep seeing commercials for this for pharmaceuticals, and they're so clear. Man, like I can get really upset. I do think pharmaceuticals can be like a healthy part of us working on our health conditions, but our society, like we do have a thing present in our society that's profit driven and it's simplistic and like convinces people that drugs are what they need. So then you buy them and then people profit. And that's kind of like how that goes. Right. And that like that deserves, I think, a passionate response that we try to do something about. At the same time, like again, pharmaceuticals can be healthy and supplements can be healthy. And I personally, I think this woman, I think Jessie is just, man, she's brilliant. She's brilliant. I think she does pretty good research. I think she like backs up her stuff reasonably well. I think her branding is brilliant. I've read her book and it's so well written. When I meet when I, like my friends, when my friends are like dealing with blood sugar or some kind of diabetes or whatever, mm-hmm. I send them to Gluco Goddess because her materials are just like that accessible. And I read the whole webpage that she's got for this supplement, antispike.com. And it's really like, it's good. It's convincing to me. And the thing is, like, she's not saying, don't try to eat well. She's saying, well, this kind of helps. And you keep asking me about stuff like this. And there's a lot of really irresponsible supplements on the market. And I want to offer you one that I think is helpful and, you know, responsibly sourced. And I don't, it could all be a huge lie, but anything could all be a huge lie. So I don't know. I do think when we're working on health things, on our blood sugar, on insulin sensitivity, all that stuff, be diet, like be nutrition forward, be nourishment forward, be reducing stress forward, be helping with my sleep forward, like do all these things. Yeah. You know, and I think maybe she could talk about that some more.
Yeah.
But these, you know, I think she does a lot of talking about things like clothing your carbs. That's something she says. And what she means is like dress them up with fiber and you'll have a lower blood sugar spike. And that's true. And that's really helpful. And that was like a gateway for me to help one of my friends start like progressively eating a little bit differently. I think she could be a little bit more nutrition forward, but I'm not, I think it's fine.
Okay. So originally the very first, so it was immediately popped in my newsfeed because there was of course a ton of people going back and forth and a lot of likes on this post. The first slide that came up for me was the chocolate cake. So it was eat the chocolate cake. This is what your blood sugar does. This is what happens when you take the two capsules and you eat the chocolate cake. My initial reaction was, oh, that's interesting. Probably wouldn't have chosen a chocolate cake though to market my product, right? But that is, she's really trying to drive this message home that you can eat the cake and manage your blood sugar at the same time. I just brought up the website in which she sells it. It is literally just herbal extracts. I have no problem whatsoever with her creating a supplement that she's been talking about these herbs or these extracts, and she decides, okay, I'm going to put it together in a formula and sell it. Do I think she probably could have been a little bit more sensitive in the marketing? Yeah. So like I probably wouldn't have marketed my, if I truly thought this product worked and I wanted to get it in people's hands, probably wouldn't market it as like eat your chocolate cake and you'll be fine kind of thing. That's the vibe that came off. But I think it probably is an interesting hack. Like it's an interesting solution because look, so many people were getting mad in these comments and I just like immediately started getting activated by the comments. And I was like, okay. But people were like, I can't believe you're promoting eating cake. You know, it's just like everybody was getting so riled up about the fact that she's promoting eating quote unquote bad foods. And all you have to do is take a pill. Look, should we try to balance our blood sugar with diet? And is that going to bring about more results and more success and all the things? Yeah, sure. It's going to support your health. But sometimes you're going to eat cake. Okay. I hate the attitude personally of you shouldn't just be eating cake in the first place. Just like ditch the cake. Why are we eating cake in the first place? Who's promoting? Nobody's saying you should go eat a cake for breakfast, but we live in the modern world and sometimes we want a piece of cake and that's okay. Sometimes we're going to eat pasta or sometimes we're going to eat mashed potatoes. Maybe not every day, but maybe for like a special occasion, a birthday party, Thanksgiving. So if there is something that we can take as a little hack that just has some herbals and we say, yeah, these herbs help me manage blood sugar better, lead to a decreased spike. Okay, why not? If you're really into that, then cool. I think it's a great little tweak and a hack. Am I going to personally use it? Probably not. I might be convinced otherwise at some other point in my life, but I'm not testing my blood sugar. I'm not typically eating big doses of carbs or anything like that. And I'm not super worried about that because I don't have any blood sugar issues. My blood sugar is stable. My insulin, all my inflammatory markers, insulin, fasting glucose, all that stuff always comes out really well when I test it. Okay. So not a product for me, but I think it might be a really great product for people who still want to engage in normal life and also might have the genetic predisposition to have more blood sugar issues or want to, you know, proactively try to stable it in these situations in which they choose to have mashed potatoes or whatever, you know? So while I'm not mad at all at the product, I think personally for me, I probably wouldn't have launched it with chocolate cake as the example. It might have been, I don't know, maybe like a sweet potato casserole, something that people recognize as like, okay, this is something that I, yeah, maybe, or like mashed potatoes, something that this is something we eat occasionally and it is fun and it does spike blood glucose, but like it's great to use this in those times. But maybe people would have been pissed either way. So who knows? I don't know. But she seems really excited about it. And she still is talking about other hacks. But then the next advertisement is like your traditional ice cream cone with like ice cream on top. And it's like anti-spike, then ice cream, and then ice cream. So she's really promoting it as a like a dessert kind of thing, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, something else is, you know, if you read the website, she says take it with your one blood sugar intense meal of the day. So yeah. She's not saying eat cake 100% of the day.
Yeah, if you read the fine print or whatever.
Yeah, and she really like wants to offer something pragmatic that helps people be healthy, and a marketing approach that feels fully ethical to everybody just doesn't exist.
Because
what you're doing is you want to show people something that you're offering, and in showing people something that you're offering, you're trying to solve a problem for them, and you have to identify the problem, and then you have to identify the language and the ideas and the images that they associate with that problem. And if you really care about what you're getting out there, if you really want to, you know, if you really care, say this is the way in for somebody, then maybe the ethical thing is being cake forward, because that's going to like help people start walking this path. I don't know, but these are questions that when you're marketing something, you have to wrestle with. And it's, the calculus is too complicated to know for sure what's correct. You know, you can't pitch this as a pill that you eat after salad, right?
Yeah, like, sure. Yes.
And it's not gonna work. And, right. You're not gonna reach the people that you wanna be reaching. And if you wanna help people eat a blood sugar friendly diet, heal their guts, all this kind of stuff, reduce inflammation, like you can't create ads for that. I mean, you kind of can, but it's different and other people are doing that, you know? And so, yeah, I always try to have a little bit of grace when I look at how people are marketing, because you want to be as responsible as possible. But it's really impossible, because in order to offer a solution, you have to identify a problem. And then there's always a question of, you know, how are you reaching people and who are you reaching? You know, if you make an ad that's about like flax seeds and high polyphenol olive oil and all this kind of like expensive ingredient stuff, like who is that going to reach? Who is that going to speak to? So, you know, the socio demographics also really matter. And I so strongly believe that, you know, discourse is about health. Like we want to try to reach people who are consuming all kinds of products. So I don't, just some thoughts.
Yeah. The contrast of comments is truly, it should be studied. You know, this is like, you really see the psychology of people and humans and how they like, how it's not about the thing. It's about
activates you.
Yeah. Like you don't have to have a reaction. You really see how reactive certain people are and how personal, everybody's offended by everything. You know, it's like we insert ourselves so much and we really have to like, we're the right ones. And so it's interesting, you know, like the top two comments is love all your content and books. Sad to see you pushing a peel. It's destroyed your credibility. And the next one is, social media continues to be so vile. If you don't like the pill, don't take it. She's not pushing crack. It's herbal. The outrage over the little things everywhere is exhausting. Which again, within the context of all the things going on in the world, it is a little thing. But like it's become this huge, you know, a thing. And then everybody was like, where are the studies? We need to see studies on this pill. That's not the way it works.
There were so many studies that she provides, and I looked at them, and they're not bad.
They're studies on the individual ingredients in the products, which I think is absolutely like credible and warranted. Then people were like, but what about the actual pill? And I'm like, no, that's not how studies work. You know, like we don't study. I mean, unless a manufacturer wants to pay for this huge thing on this one pill, but then it's really hard to eliminate bias in those situations. But if we have information about magnesium, not every single magnesium supplement is going to be tested to make sure that it's true of this supplement too, you know?
Well, yeah. And you know, if she came out against cake, it would be a whole different crowd of people mad about something else. I think she knew that there was going to be a ton of pushback, and that's why she did so much due diligence. Mm-hmm. And I think the website design is really smart. Who knows, maybe she's pulling the wool over my eyes. fine. We're pulling the wool over our eyes all the time. That's a human being.
It is what it is. This is the world we live in. Yeah. Whether you're active, it's hot and humid outside, you are regularly using the sauna, or you follow a whole foods diet, which is naturally low in sodium, you need to be thinking about replacing your electrolytes. This is one of the best ways to build stress resilience and support your adrenals. Electrolytes are minerals. They are like the spark plugs in the body because they're responsible for tens of thousands of reactions. Deficiencies show up as dizziness, muscle cramps, headaches, fatigue, especially if you get dizzy when you go from sitting down or laying down to standing. That's a huge sign that your adrenals need more support, specifically from minerals. One of my favorite ways, in fact, the only way that I like to replace my electrolytes is with Element. I started supplementing with Element after workouts. It made such a huge difference almost immediately in my recovery and how I felt throughout the rest of the day. Element makes grab-and-go electrolyte replacement packs with no sugar, gluten fillers, or artificial ingredients. Just tear open a pack, pour, and stir it into water. I've actually now been mixing it up like half a pack for my kids when they are sick or when they're out doing sports. This is so important for the spring and summer season when kids are out. I always have some on hand. It's in the car. It's in my purse because with sickness, workouts, overall just feeling overwhelmed, burnt out, going back and forth all day, driving around, it makes a huge difference and it's a wonderful pick-me-up. Right now, everyone, including new and current customers, can get a free 8-pack with every order. Element comes in boxes of 30. There is free shipping on all orders, and now all orders get a free 8-pack. To get Element, go to drinklmnt.com/wellfed and make sure to use the code WELLFED for your free sample 8-pack. That's drinklmnt.com/wellfed. Let's jump into questions. Question number one is from Carly M. Stratton. She says, how do I care for myself during postpartum and breastfeeding when sleep and opportunity for rest is lacking? I'm gaining weight similar to the last time I was postpartum. Any advice?
Do you want to lead and then I can?
Yeah, sure. So I'm gaining weight similar to the last time I was postpartum. So this is an interesting note for me because I feel like this is how your body responds. And that's totally normal. It's not something we need to like keep fighting and push up against. There is a misconception that, you know, again, every body is different and how you respond postpartum and to the stress and your individual situation and the support you have and how difficult your kids are as newborns, all that plays into this. And so there's a lot of different factors. It seems like your body in response to being postpartum, experiencing this significant stress, the lack of sleep, all that kind of stuff, is to gain weight, which is a protective mechanism. Also, I feel like when I was postpartum and breastfeeding, I was just starving all the time. I did not lose weight breastfeeding. In fact, I think probably for 9 or 10 months, I really didn't lose any weight. I was eating a ton and trying to put up with a lot of milk and produce a lot of milk. And that can be normal too. So I think you need to, one of the best things you can do is lean into the normal for you. If it's abnormal for other people, that's fine. We don't need to make ourselves fit a very specific, this is what should happen postpartum. You should breastfeed and you should lose weight and the baby weight should come off. And that's just a bunch of bull. Like there's no exact way that postpartum needs to happen for it to be quote unquote successful or right for your body or whatever. So lean into your normal. And that again will reduce stress overall, because if you're stressing about, I shouldn't be gaining this weight and this is a problem, when it's really not a problem, it's just how your body is adapting. And in this season of life, in this stage, it's fine. So reduce the mental and emotional stress that you're putting yourself through. Remind yourself that it's normal. Make sure that you are aware of the stress that's in your life and how you can reduce things that just don't matter right now. Obviously, sleep when you can, and try to make sure that you have food on hand, that you're not saying yes to too much right now. Obviously, you have more than one kid, so saying no to a lot. You don't have to have a clean house. You don't have to have your kids in like matching Easter outfits. Now, all that stuff is fun, but you have years and years and years that you can have fun with that kind of stuff when the stress is not as intense as it is right now. The expectations in our society are just wild, especially on the modern woman, especially on women. You know, we're supposed to now be working and like productive and out of the house and bringing in the bacon, but also at the same time, still maintaining all of the other expectations that are on women, like cooking nutrient dense meals, volunteering at school and the PTA and lunch leader, and, you know, doing, being a part of nonprofits and making sure that we're like cute and look good all the time and our hair is done. And so it's completely and totally overwhelming. So at some point you have to decide what is it that you value? What is it that you want to put your time and your effort into? And postpartum, I believe, is the 2 years after giving birth, but most notably the year after giving birth. I think if you wait 6 months, I think if you wait 9 months to even think about exercise and movement again, that's totally fine. So for me, I mean, I was in a, like looking back on it now, I was really struggled, especially with the second one. And I'm very thankful that I just let my body exist where it needed to exist and not worried about that. Cause there was way too much other stuff to worry about. And I didn't even start lifting or moving again until 9 or 10 months postpartum. And that's when I had night weaned. And I just felt like, okay, I can actually take on this mental shift now. Cause it is a mental shift. It's like getting yourself into the habit of working out again, getting yourself into the habit of being a little bit more thoughtful with your food intake and your protein intake and all that kind of stuff. Like, that's a mental load. And so you have to be able to take that on. So let your body exist and be, and reduce the unnecessary stress and expectations. Maybe at about a year, you know, do some postpartum work in which you're, you know, going and seeing a pelvic floor physical therapist. Maybe you do some sort of postpartum workout program where you're working on activation and core stuff if you want to. If you don't want to, fine. Just do it when you're ready. Do it when you can take on that mental load. And at about a year postpartum, start changing things a little bit. Start exposing your body to different forms of stress, because that's what it is. Working out, walking a little bit more, being a bit more intentional with your food, making sure you're getting protein-rich, you know, protein-rich breakfast. You're bringing in little bits of control now that you can handle it. And truthfully, I didn't quite feel like myself until Maverick turned about 3. That is when I felt like, okay, now I'm in the swing of things again. Now sleep is consistent. Now my body is completely recovered. And now I can actually like move and lift and get back to what I was doing before. And that's just the way my body was. Now, obviously, Ballerina Farm and some other women can do whatever they want 12 days postpartum. That's just not me. So lean into whatever is normal for you.
I have nothing to add.
Okay.
It was good.
Fantastic. Question number 2 is from the Ninub Chronicles. Do people with autoimmune disease require more protein or less? This is a really good question.
That's a great question. We had a question about autoimmune disease in our last podcast. It's such a big thing. I have no personal experience with it, so I wouldn't weigh in authoritatively on this question. I would say, even if, like, you know, say hypothetically, there are some studies that show that generally speaking, people with autoimmune disease or people with any kind of condition do better with X, X amount of this, Y amount of that, whatever. Generally speaking, there tends to be this trend that people with something that you have something. You could be right on point with this trend. You could need way more of it than what is recommended, or you could need less because these studies only document generalizations, and humans always are different. And so I would recommend starting with what's generally recommended and trying a little bit more, trying a little bit less, and seeing how you feel. And then always with protein, making sure that you're getting the complete set of amino acids. I mean, I think that that's really important. And this is all very general, but that's what I got.
Yeah. So when I was doing a lot of my research on protein as we age and protein intake, specifically, you know, for people who are aging as muscle protein synthesis declines, it's so, you know, we start losing muscle mass starting at age 30. I think it's like 3 to 8% per decade. That is not that's not an absolute. That doesn't actually have to happen. What happens is our body's ability to actually build muscle declines. So muscle protein synthesis is the process in which we use protein to build or maintain muscle. All throughout the day, our body is breaking down protein, and then it uses the protein that we eat to build new protein, new tissues, new muscle, all that kind of stuff. So what actually happens is as we age, our body's ability to synthesize protein and make protein from, or make muscle, sorry, tissue from the protein that we're eating declines. The way around that is to increase your protein intake. One of the other things that actually increases your protein requirements is chronic disease, inflammation, and surgery. Now, I think that that's probably not super surprising that surgery would increase your need for proteins, because what are we doing? We're breaking down the body, we're breaking apart tissues, we're creating repairs, and then anybody who's had surgery knows there's a recovery period where things hurt a lot, where things don't move the same, especially if you have like a labral tear in your shoulder. Like, you have to retrain that muscle to work again. So there's going to be some atrophy, there's going to be some rebuilding, so there's going to be some repair. So that increases your body's need for protein. There is a study that I will link to. It's called Pre and Post-Surgical Nutrition for Preservation of Muscle Mass Strength and Functionality Following Orthopedic Surgery. It says, due to the hypercortisolemia that occurs with surgery, protein synthesis is reduced and protein breakdown increases. Hypercortisolemia is a condition involving a prolonged excess of serum levels of cortisol, which happens when we have surgery. So I find that interesting, because if this chronic inflammation, if this increase in cortisol increases our need for protein, well, gosh, that seems like most women probably have a slightly increased need for protein, especially if you're dealing with a chronic condition, especially if you're dealing with chronic inflammation, especially if you're dealing with high cortisol. You have this protein synthesis that is reduced. And so protein breakdown is increasing, the synthesis is reduced, so your need for protein increases. There's another study that I found. This is dietary protein and changes in biomarkers of inflammation and oxidative stress. It says chronic inflammation is thought to be a major characteristic of aging, which may increase the need for substrates, especially protein, to support anti-inflammatory processes. So protein actually supports our anti-inflammatory processes. Also in the study, they found protein intake was inversely associated with changes in inflammation and oxidative stress scores. So dietary protein may be associated with beneficial changes in the inflammatory burden in the aging populations. What does that constitute? Inflammation increases your need for protein, but higher protein intakes actually are associated with lower inflammation and lower oxidative stress. So it kind of all plays into each other. This is why I firmly believe higher protein diets are important for especially women 30 plus, but most especially women 40 plus, when we really start to see a lot of this muscle mass decline. Typically, a lot of women are struggling with perimenopause or hormonal imbalances. And if you're not getting sufficient protein, your body's going to struggle potentially with inflammation. So what can we gather from this? I think it's safe to say that when you have a chronic disease or a chronic condition, or you're struggling with an autoimmune condition, your protein requirements increase. Now, I think for the recommendations that I make for people when it comes to protein are pretty standard across the board. And so this actually is great for women 40, 50, 60 plus as well, but around 0.8 to 1 gram per pound of body weight is like a pretty decent range. So like my target, you know, if you're, let's say you're 150 pounds, it would be somewhere between like 120 to 150 grams of protein per day. And that is sufficient. That's what we've seen in the literature, sufficient for active older adults too. So I am team increase your protein early and keep it up so that you maintain your muscle mass, reduce inflammation, and actually can repair your tissues, repair your muscle, and support your body's, you know, the creation of this metabolically active tissue. So that's my thoughts. Anything else from you?
I have not been in this like deep dive. Noelle's just been in this deep dive into protein for the last few months. And I've just been like so into it, approaching 40, into this deep dive into, you know, what, how do we age healthfully? You know, how do we do all this stuff? I love what you had to say about, again, about these studies. There's so much that shows like decline. And yeah, like wear and tear happens. But when you intentionally are aware of that and make up for it, then, you know, then hopefully you'll stay all right. I don't know. I'm hanging out with a lot of people in later stages in life right now. I live in a neighborhood of people in later stages of life, not to make this a response to, or a reflection on aging, but you know, so much of it is just like, I don't want to say it's a choice, but how we live and how we care for ourselves as we move through these things, like it matters. I work out a lot and people comment on it. And I'm like, well, yeah, because I want to protect all this, you know.
Yes.
Preparedness never hurts. Preparedness never hurts ever, unless you know you prepare like totally wrong. So yeah, I'm gonna let that.
I like that. I like the quote that muscle is your skeletal armor as you age. You know, that it's metabolically active. It of course improves insulin sensitivity and all those things, but it also keeps you stronger and you have better functional independence. I mean, we have all this literature that shows that people who have higher protein diets are 30% more likely to maintain strength and functional independence as they age.
Yes. And brain health. Oh, it's so important for brain health. I cannot, people, you know, and I'm a writer and I tell people, like, I honestly, I know this is weird, but I consider weightlifting a part of my job because my job is like thinking really well, honestly. And so taking care of myself is, and not like we need to take care of ourselves for our jobs, you know, but like, it's a part of how I show up for myself and everybody in the world. Is I love that, you know, protein, muscle is the armor of like of everything, you know. Anyway.
Yeah. By the way, I have been sharing this on social media, but I am working on a protein, like a totally free protein guide. If you go to coconutsandkettlebells.com/protein-prep, basically it's going to be what I've put together now is like, it's like a 12 to 15 page guide where my protein hacks. So like, here are the 5 easy protein hacks. Here's some easy high protein breakfast ideas. Here's how you make it work in your day. And then I'm working on what's taking me a little bit longer to actually formulate how I'm going to do this, but I'm working on some sort of template where I can actually write out, here's how I actually prep my protein. So here's what you're doing. Here's what we're making on Monday night. And here's how we're recycling it or working it into meals on Mondays and Wednesdays, for example. And then Tuesday I'm making this and I'm tripling the recipe. So it basically is going to be kind of like a little blueprint for how do you actually prep your protein, make it work, and all the things. So go to my website. Yeah.
Nice. Like PS, like way at the end of the question.
I forgot. It's like, it's on my... knocked on my to-do list. I got the whole
love it
initial nutrition hacks done, and now I've got to actually sit down and get the other thing done. So you can join the, I have a thing up where you can put your email down and then you'll be the first to test it out. If you want to give yourself a leg up with all the sicknesses still going around, D3 can help. After doing a ton of research, in addition to taking other immune supportive supplements like probiotics and beta-glucan, I'm taking vitamin D and K2 again daily. Specifically, I'm taking MD Logic's vitamin D3 with K2, which contains two different forms of K2, known as MK4 and MK7. They both have different benefits. So MK4 has been shown to promote healthy bone density and maintain strong bones, while MK7 is more bioavailable. It's also emulsified in olive oil, not vegetable oils. Even with a diet rich in vitamin D, most people, including myself, trend low in vitamin D. Approximately 42% of the U.S. population is deficient in vitamin D. And study upon study shows that vitamin D supplementation effectively prevents respiratory tract infections. Supplementation is also associated with fewer colds, and it also protects against major chronic diseases. When supplementing with vitamin D, it's crucial that you take it with K2. This ensures that calcium transported via vitamin D is absorbed by your bones rather than accumulating in deposits in your arteries. And unfortunately, most vitamin D supplements on the market do not contain K2. To get my favorite high-quality vitamin D3 with K2 that's tested for contaminants, go to mdlogichealth.com/D3. Use coupon code WellFed for 10% off or subscribe and save. You can get 3 bottles every 3 months for 15% off. That's MD Logic, L-O-G-I-C, Health, health.com/D3. Use coupon code WellFed for 10% off and you'll always get free shipping on orders of $50 or more.
Okay, last question.
Yes.
Is from Jess Ryder. She says, is running with some strength going to ruin me in the long run? Love it for my mental health, but feel like cardio is demonized, not the right focus for the 35 plus crowd.
Very interesting. My yes was because I really want to talk about running. You know, it's funny. I often like come out hard against running, but that's the thing that I come out hard against in running is like our cultural presumption that it's the cornerstone of health. And I think it's a part of this whole idolatry of willpower and who runs the longest and, you know, all this kind of like performative and stuff and like, whatever, it's a thing and it's fine. I think the important thing is just being aware of that. You know, I think there are plenty of people who run a lot and really flourish. And I know a lot of people, you know, speaking of aging, there are people who that's part of like how they keep moving. And they run into their 70s, even into their 80s. And there are a lot of people in this world who do long distance running as like a meditative practice or all this kind of stuff. And you can read books about it. And there's something about it that I find really beautiful so long as it's not tearing you down. And, you know, that's your question here is do we think? I think running can be corrosive to your joints. I think it can be a part of chronic stress response. Maybe you're under eating. Maybe you're really stressed in your life. You know, it can be related to unhealthfully and it can create wear and tear. But also it doesn't have to. And for a lot of people, it's a stress release. And so all I would do, and this is another one of those things I say so much on the podcast, I feel like you may as well just like create an AI script and have it just over and over again, say it and I'll just stop showing up. No, just keep saying it. It's like, is be mindful and intentional and pay attention. You know, if you start feeling physical effects in your limbs, like in your knees and your hips and your ligaments and your ankles and your feet, whatever, notice and pause and take care of it. And then come back to it more resilient and see if you've sufficiently addressed the problem and if it's still present. Like, you know, I would just be really attentive to if problems arise, you know, if you notice that maybe you're getting cold, your immune system isn't up to par, maybe you're not sleeping as well, maybe like all these kinds of things, just pay attention. And if it seems like it's starting to affect wear and tear, like that, then back off. You could back off a lot and really take care of this stuff and then see if you can return in the same fashion or in a lesser fashion, or you could, you know, how much you back off is up to you. Yeah. I'm going to leave it at that. And, you know, there's also like, you could go out running for an hour, 2 hours, however long your long distance is. Maybe don't do it every day, right? Like there are different ways to cut back. You can cut back and say, well, I'm just going to do 30 minutes a day or whatever. Or you could say, all right, like I'm still going to go out with these super long runs, but I'm only going to do it once or twice a week, you know? And, you know, setting matters and how you feel. You know, there's been tons of studies that show like, you know, what's stress and what's like, quote unquote, eustress, E-U-S-T-R-E-S-S. And people's mindset about what they're doing really matters. Like it really matters a lot. If you're running and you're feeling like really stressed and critical and whatever, you're forcing yourself to do it, you don't love it, that is actually like a fair bit different from like joyously frolicking in the sunshine and enjoying the trees and the wind and all that kind of stuff, right? Like it just mindset does matter. And so I would just encourage everybody to, and I'm not saying that having a positive attitude about running necessarily means that like physically it's not going to wear you down, because it still could. You know, but my point is just, we like to have healthy relationships with the things in our lives that make us feel good. And I think that healthfulness comes from just paying attention and then making changes when appropriate.
Yeah. I struggle with this because the last thing a runner wants to hear is that running is bad for your joints. Like, it's like, okay, screw you. Because when you are in it and when you are running and you're enjoying it, like you feel good. Like, there is a huge, the runner's high is real. And a lot of runners that you do see are very fit and, you know, they manage their health well, and it's, you know, they're doing it because they love it. And it definitely attracts a certain type of person, which is like the type A, the person who really wants to push, and maybe this is you, maybe it's not, but the person who likes to be like, I'm doing your sports punishment for fun. You know, the person who kind of likes that it's hard to do when they can do it. That was me. Okay. So, you know, I've done marathons. I've done half Ironmans. I've done a lot of half marathons. I've done a lot of running. And it was something that I kept chasing after. And I kept wanting, so there was like a point in my 20s where I was able to run a lot and do well at it. And then it became unhealthy for me. And I kept always wanting to get back to that, get it back to the place where running was easy and running was cool and I could do the races and all that kind of stuff. And I had, you know, I was just constantly injured. And I know injury can come with any sport. However, I will say after years of doing intentional lifting and walking, you know, I'm always going to struggle with back pain. And honestly, it came from my years of running. But I was way more injured than I ever should have been, with throwing my back out, with knee issues, with plantar fasciitis, with, you know, foot pain, ankle pain. I had a compression injury on my ankle, and my ankle still has never really been the same. Just everything. At 20, in my 20s, I should have never been in as much pain and injury as I was. And so sometimes you get sucked into that with running, is you get sucked into, I want to do it a little bit better and I want to be faster. So that can be problematic. However, maybe it's not for you, and that's fine. And I think that, you know, the occasional, maybe you run once a week or whatever. Cool. Like, do that. Do what works for you. Maybe you like to do some little, like, maybe a 20-minute session of hill sprints. I actually really, I'm on this kick. I really want Ken to get something called a Woodway treadmill. Now, this thing is like 10 grand, so it's not going to happen. But I'm like, can we just find this thing used or whatever? But it essentially is a free belt treadmill. where you can hold on to the handles in front of you and actually push the belt backwards. So you're running, but it's like you're sled pushing. And once you get the belt moving pretty quickly, it's a good workout. Now, I don't want to go run, but I like the idea of doing something really quick where I can maybe just be coasting, but then I can push really hard for 30 seconds, almost like kind of like I'm sled pushing. And then, you know, have that ease built into a workout because it can be short and quick. So I don't think the activity of running is bad. The problem lies in where the data shows that it is a problem and it's not conducive for 35 plus year olds is that typically when we are running, we're doing steady state cardio where we're just kind of coasting in this middle range, what we call fat burning zone, which that's a misnomer. I'm sure all of you know what I'm talking about, where we're not doing higher intensity training. We're doing this like semi endurance kind of coasting. And that does increase cortisol. It is a stressor on the body. So, and it only improves aerobic capacity. Whereas if you were to do shorter efforts that you rotate in intensity, if you were to do, let's say, I would much rather you do a 10-minute workout where you've done 4 or 5 pushes followed by walking than to go out for a 20-minute or 30-minute run. And that's because of cortisol. Cortisol and the steady state cardio is just kind of you're coasting. It's elevated for a long period of time. Whereas with this, and you're only working your aerobic capacity, you're only building endurance. Whereas if you're doing shorter workouts with higher intensity efforts, I mean, I'm sure everybody's heard this a million times, but you know, you're building both aerobic and anaerobic capacity. Your cortisol does not stay elevated. So you're not having this like chronic high cortisol output. And it's decreasing and then it's spiking and then it's decreasing. And that improves a lot of really cool things like EPOC or excess post-exercise consumption, oxygen consumption. You're building your fitness, I would say, in a more holistic capacity. So for women 35 plus, yeah, like we're already under a lot of stress. Our bodies have already been through a lot, right? And so, especially if you've had kids, like your core's not activating properly, potentially. And running in general, I hate to say this, but it deteriorates muscle tissue. Cardio is like eats at your muscle. If you are not proactively building muscle, you're tearing it down. That is why runners are pretty thin and lean and have a very, you know, smaller muscles is because running at that capacity, your body starts using muscle tissue for energy and endurance and all that kind of stuff. And if you think about it, it's sort of like biologically makes sense. If you want to run faster and run longer, and that's what you're training your body to do, and your body says, I need to get good at this. Like, we're still doing this. Like, I need to get better, more efficient. Your body's probably going to want to shed some of that heavier muscle tissue to make you more efficient at it. So that's why I don't love it. I think I would much rather you build both aerobic and anaerobic capacity, decrease your exposure to cortisol, and build muscle tissue, metabolically active tissues that supports insulin sensitivity, you know, supports blood sugar balance, improves your muscle maintenance and strength and functional capacity and all that kind of stuff as you age. You know, we don't want something to be taking away that skeletal armor. Those are just my opinions. I do believe that it is more beneficial to do other things, but if you just love running and it's working for you right now, then do that. I'm not going to be somebody who says you should stop running. You have the information now. You get to decide what's right for you and your body. Like, you're in control. You're the leader. You get to decide. So maybe if you're like, I really do want to try to do other things, maybe you just reduce the amount that you're running. So instead of running 3 times a week, maybe you're just doing once or twice and you're incorporating, you know, full body workouts and stuff like that, and just see how you feel. But
yeah, it's, you know, something that I might offer on the back of that. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, you're fine.
Is, you know, identifying what it is about running that you love and then seeing if you can get it elsewhere. If you want to, like, you know, moderate a little bit, right? So if it's getting outdoors, you could go for a half hour walk or speed walk or hike, and then come home and lift for 10 minutes, right? So I kind of try to get that kind of, that balance between the muscle building and the movement and how much movement I'm doing. And also, if you're really into like the meditativeness of running, I personally, as we've discussed recently, part of why I like working out with a little like YouTube influencer is that it does feel kind of meditative to me, because I can shut off. I'm not like the one in charge of figuring out what movements to do next. And I just like get on with the influencer. Some of them don't even talk, you know, and I like the ones that talk, but you know what I mean? And so, or classes for something, and then you're weightlifting and you're in the zone, you know, or create a way for yourself to get that meditative presence, but elsewhere, or, you know, the fitness, the particular kind of fitness, but, you know, without the wear and tear, and like Noelle said, depleting the armor, or just, you know, you do you.
Agreed. Anything else today? Nope. Bring it to a close. Thank you guys for being here. Follow Stephanie at Stephanie Ruper on the X. Follow me at Coconuts and Kettlebells on the Insta. Thanks for being here, guys. We will talk to you next week.